ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week is part two with DKSC with Juan Martinez. We dig a little bit deeper about connections with players and movement of players and how they handle different things within the club. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch. How do you guys handle talent movement then? If a player's very developing mid-season, do you guys will bump them to ECNL from RL to, from RL to ECNL or North Texas RL to RL? Or how do you guys do that? Or do you guys let them sit through the whole season and move them at the end of the season based on that? Or do you guys give them a chance in tournaments or move them during for league play?
No, it's always say count on change and development for everybody happens different. I sign on our NL teams, 10s, 11s, and then our pre-CNL team, 12s, we sign just kind of like the minimum, you know, but our RL teams, we're constantly talking to those coaches and give you an example with the 12s. We went to Surf Cup with the 12s. We took three players from our second team. There's players that constantly show up to practice. We're going to use those players because we feel that they have the level, but they're not there yet because rules. Once you come out in the half, you can't go back in. And if the kid's not playing at that age, how are they going to continue developing and learning? So we basically, when showcase events come, we constantly look like we're going to friendlies this week at Aggieland, and we're taking a younger player to play with our tens, and we're constantly looking at with Seleção. We have two of the very best 14s in the Metroplex playing up with the 13s, and those players, as they continue to develop, we might push them up another year. We're always going to look to challenge them, but not over challenge them where it becomes they're not enjoying because they are kids. It goes, we preach social aspect of it. They are kids. It cannot just be about moving them because they might build those relationships. And let's not pull the band-aid. Let's give them a taste of playing with older kids, and they might build that relationship, and they might be then, man, this is even better because we're constantly educating parents and players that each player is running a different race. Some players want to chase to play a professional. We currently have three players that went to América Femenil in Mexico, tried out for their 2012 boys, 2013 boys, for the Spain tournament to represent Club América. And they made it. And these are kids, the parents that make the sacrifice to get them there, you know, that they went there. That's not for everybody. And we tell the parent, doesn't mean that you didn't go, you're not going to make your dreams happen. There's different paths. So we're here constantly looking, how do we take Pedro does a good job of taking his boys to Spain. We're looking and saying, how do we take our boys, our girls, femenil to Spain? Because the sport's growing so much. So that's one of the things for us is always being innovative. Always, I have a servant heart. So I'm always looking. If you sign with DKSC, I'm here to serve you. So even without you knowing, I'm constantly already looking and seeing which players are real sin to XYZ because the parent trusts the process. There's parents that don't get the playing time, and we're kind of like, keep it moving. Like, we want to build a culture that you represent this club. And I think with our resources and our education and coaches, you know, if you do trust the process, and we're not for everybody, you know, we're like, again, you know, if you only care about results, which I'm super competitive. So I've won a lot, but I understood it's a process that you have to teach.
That's
So yeah.
it's a hard one. It really is. So with that
No.
being said, you're talking about pathways. You guys obviously from a very young age promote the pathways. So do you guys have connections with big name cl pro clubs or
Yeah.
semi-pro clubs, not just in the United States, but from sounds like in Mexico?
Yeah.
You actually talked about it earlier, and this is something that I have said since I learned ever since I interviewed Daniel. I truly believe your goal for kids' college pathway was that you want to say a college coach can reach out saying, I need a number nine. I need a number two. Who do you recommend?
Right.
And you can say, here is a list of five players for each position that you're looking for. I'm not doing a rank them, but here are five kids I think that could fit that profile. And you want to be on the national level saying, if a college, let's say I'll use, I don't care, college X, Y, and Z says, I need this player profile. Do you have any players that meet it that could also meet this player profile? And you'll say, here's my list. You can reach out to them. I have been saying this for a long time now. I feel probably since I learned about Bad Top U, and that was slightly before Daniel interviewing him, that you guys want to be the place where colleges come and say, I need this profile. And even more so since I learned about Bad Top U. Now, I don't know how big of a scale of a pathway outside of college you guys have. And that's where I'm trying to get to is where do you guys have pathways or branches into. Like I know that other clubs have open tryouts with other clubs in Mexico where they can send players, like, here's my top five players, and they send them to Mexico to go try out for a pro team. Do you guys have programs like that?
Yeah, you know, talking about pathways and I guess networking opportunities. I remember when I first started coaching, it was my ministry, and I basically always prayed for the Lord to open expand my territory, those divine interventions, those divine appointments. And throughout the years now, I've met so many people, and I don't talk about this because I'm not the gatekeeper. A lot of people use that, like, I could get to there. One of the things that I see happening is that so many coaches promote that. Come through me and I'll take care of you. Yeah, you might take care of your 10 players that had the goods because their level is what got them there. But you're promoting that. The other ones, because I see it, they're like, they never even contact the coach. With me, every coach, when I started the O1s, the fear tactics that they would tell the O1s, your coach, Juan Martinez, has zero connections with colleges. So why are you staying there? You're ruining your daughter's opportunity. So the girls were 10, 11. The parents came to me and said, this is what we're hearing. And myself, I would tell them, they're absolutely right. I have no zero connections. But you know what? Nobody's recruiting your daughter at 10, 11. I'll drive you myself if I cannot put college coaches on those sidelines. Because I have a daughter on the team too. So if we cannot get the exposure, I'll drive you myself to whatever club and I'll take the entire team. By the time the girls were 13 and 14, we're one of the best teams in the nation. We had the sideline filled with US, Mexico, every top five. And I met the Anson Dorans from North Carolina, the Beckys from Florida. They were just like, oh my God, this team, and we stuck out like a sore thumb wearing the Brazil uniforms. I remember that they started recruiting all of them, and I would tell the parents, didn't they say we weren't going to get the exposure? Okay. Now I look at it as like, when I stopped coaching in 2018, I created JMS, which stood for Juan Martinez Soccer. I added a square root for soccer school. Now it's just JMS. But I created there because I felt like I had this large network of connections that I have made. And once I stopped coaching, how am I going to use that network to bless the next student athletes? So when I meet people, they hear the story. They see that I'm really there to serve. There's so many players. There's so many coaches that contact me and say, Juan, we need a number two. We need a number six. If we don't have one in our club, I'll tell them, one, they should be looking at another club. I won't ever even tell that parent or anybody because it's kind of like when you give. Lord says, don't see it for everybody to see how much you gave. I don't use this to basically say, well, he's a gatekeeper. But connections I've made, like with Mexico national team, I was at their camp for 3 days with their head coach, Pedro, that he won a U-20 World Cup with Spain. He's the women's head coach. He's interested in some players that I used to coach. And Jimena and Andrea has realized that we have a lot of minorities. So they invited me so they could share their methodology, their system of play, what they're doing, their programs. I was there 3 years. They let me access to everything, weight room, film, even the meetings. I took a lot from it, but now they're like this club, that club, America, Chivas, Pumas, you name it. They're constantly contacting me. I have voice message that they're looking for American soccer players. I don't tell anybody because I'm like, they might want to go to college. You know, right. I'm not going to push them and try to influence them. Like say, if you don't go now, you're making a mistake. I won't do that. I have to sleep at night. So I basically would tell the player or the parent XYZ, the money, You know, now players are getting signed at 15 year old, and I'm seeing those contracts because there's agencies that are contacting me wanting talent. And when Jada Thomas or Samantha Mesa are, you know, they see me as a father figure, so they ask me for my advice. And then people say, well, why are you asking? Well, I haven't asked like a dad for me. And so I look at it as like, well, here's a divine appointment. I'm going to build that relationship with Colombia national team, with U.S. scouts, with Mexico scouts, with Puerto Rico, you name it, Canada. You know, so a lot of these coaches from colleges reach out to me. Juan, you're the only one that I could trust. We need a solid four with the great work rate, technically sound. Because I hear coaches, they sell all their players. And I hear them, and I'm like, you're just burning them. Because this coach knows that every player you talk to him about it is the next Mia Hamm, is the next Tobin Heath. You know, it's that credibility. And for me, I always tell parents, I will never recommend a kid that has a bad attitude or not a good work rate. I said, because attitude drives everything. Character drives everything. So I'll tell the parent, you're asking me, hopefully they don't contact me. I'm not going to call a coach and I'm not going to call a coach and say, hey, you don't want this kid. But if the coach contacts me and says, Juan, what can you tell me? Hey, this is my opinion. Like, this is how it was. It was 5 years ago, X, Y, Z. I have no idea how they turned, but this is, and that's why I tell parents, ruin it for their kids. Is it because it's a real, real tight-knit group, but connections that we have, it's pretty much with every Mexico Femenil team. We have some in Europe. You know, they're starting to contact. Can you send our send players? But agencies, hey, we need some players now. Pedro's built good relationships with the boys side. The game's changing so much, it's growing so much. And so I feel like if there's players that want to play pro, the connections are there. But it's not for everybody, you know, it's definitely not for everybody. I would always recommend, I always tell players, if the money they're going to pay you outweighs the scholarship, then you have to consider it, because you could do alternate school, but always, you know, look what you want to do when the ball stops rolling.
I think Landon Donovan, his interview when he went pro, he talked about his mom was a teacher. And mm-hmm. she goes, they had to put money aside for him to go to college. So if he, whenever he finished playing, it was $50,000 a year, they would put aside for him in his contract so he could go to college when he was done playing. And I'm like, that's genius.
Yeah.
And so he had a self-funded scholarship to go to college when he was done. And he didn't have to worry about the financial side of the game for schooling. Now, man, I have so many questions. And I don't know where to start because I'm looking at the time.
No worries.
As a parent that has two young kids, and I only come from the aspect of looking at it from my kids' eyes. So in the academy side, when you guys, with the academy, do you guys bring in, I've always been told the best coaches should be in the academy and the crummier coaches should be in the older kids groups. And the more I have talked to coaches, the more I have watched the game, I'm starting to truly believe that. I mean, even some of the best coaches that I know that keep coach at the high level says, like, I really should be in the academy coaching, but they're asking me to coach here. And this is how I pay for the meals to put on the table. I have to coach the older kids because this is my full-time job. And you're not talking, maybe not the smaller clubs here in North Texas, but you're talking the larger ones, and they're saying this. And it's fascinating to hear that, no, once they get to about U14, you just have to teach tactics of the game, because if they don't, like you said, the foundation's not there, they aren't going to be successful. But by that point of time, by U14, they need to be understanding the tactics of the game and versus the technical side. Do you feel that the academy should be more focused? That's what you've talked about you're doing, but across the board, maybe not even in Texas, but nationwide, do you see that to be the need versus the want for clubs to be doing?
I feel coaches, for most part, sometimes want to teach, but they're focused on more results because the parent, I always tell the parents, you feed the beast. You know, if that coach doesn't win that tournament, your team blows up. I've seen our 2014 teams, top team won Surf Cup back to back, won Vegas Cup, won every term. They were the best team. And I always tell parents, man, who cares? Like, great, compete, enjoy it. But you're not even at the starting line. Just results aren't everything, I would have tell the parents. And they were just so caught up. They lose Super Copa and that team blows up. Team blows up. And I always tell parents this. I was like, you really think that you could get a group of players that gel together over 2-3 years, put them somewhere, and they're going to play the same style? Now, you could still probably have results, get athletes. You know, you still have that, but the style of play and really, truly developing. But I feel like the better coaches know, they know that. They know if they come to the academy is crazy. You know, they're not under contract. So it's constantly moving. They're constantly changing teams. Now it's the norm. You know, there's no loyalty. It becomes, we're just going to try it out. And I see it. I see parents, they'll call me and it's like, we want to burn a bridge. We want to come back. We just need a change.
Once going back to what you're saying, and you were talking about the teams blowing up after 2014.
After winning. So I think good coaches know that the academy, it's right now, you know, a lot of parents that they're going through the select process. Their kid, it's maybe very good for different reasons. Maybe they put in the work to get very technically strong. Their growth spurt, you know, maybe they're the January, February birthdays. And playing against November, December is a big difference. So the parent, I see it all the time, their kid's scoring 3-4 goals. And all of a sudden it becomes when they're not there, everybody's like, what? And I've heard parents basically say, I got the real estate, you know, and their kid is 7, 8, 9. And so good coaches, they don't want that environment. They're like in select, they're at least under contract. Right. So, but I do agree that the better coaches, the teachers of the game should be in academy. That's where the kids grow as the most. That's where you could teach a kid 7 different languages. They'll pick it up, you know, but it's a crazy environment. Academy, it's crazy. So one of the things that I'm doing now is working with our academy coaches too. Focus on the environment. Yes, you got to compete. Every time you blow the whistle, we're trying to win, right? But that's where I think Selecao, I'm jumping in to get our better players technically sound. And eventually that's where we want to go, is that we have the better coaches in the academy. And not just in academy, but in the formidable years, the U11, the U12s. Because like once they get to like, I would say U15, they should already know what they're doing, understanding the tactical awareness, you know, their decision making, you know, that all that stuff should be really at the end engraved in them because of years. And I see some coaches where they don't coach any, they don't say a word. I'm like, that's a good coach, you know, because their players have learned. Then I see those coaches where they're joysticking. And here's the problem. Here's the problem, because I've seen it so many times where coaches are standing up, joysticking every single play. And now that I'm coaching, I'm basically notes and then veal. And then, yes, we do sometimes coach, but we're allowing them to make those mistakes. And then parents, well, he got coached you. I was like, listen, this is like taking a test. Okay. If you're interested in winning this game, like a meaningless game, just a regular season, one of maybe 75 that they play in a year, because now it seems like parents want to play in two, three leagues because of the social media, the videos, that dopamine that gets released in their brain. They get the high of, I got to get my fix. And I look at it as like, I always tell my parents, train, play one game and train more often, train 4 days a week. Your kid would develop, but you have to trust the process. But I feel that coaches don't jump into the academy because they know how crazy North Texas is.
That's the thing. So having a 5-year-old, like we've had, I coached her, and the coach eventually says, "I'm going to start stealing your players on your team." And they weren't because of me. These girls were talented before they even came when I was coaching them, and they're 3 and a half, 4 years old. But watching them all grow and get older now, and watching them grow as little girl athletes now, it's absolutely amazing because they have the natural talent, and that's what she took from me. Then I'm watching my son when I coached him for the year and a half, but was it a year and a half or so I coached with him. The mentality is different. Even though it's starting roughly the same age groups, coaching, the difference in how they think, and watching someone that actually knows how to coach little kids and watching someone that does not, me, watching them grow and develop and understand where my daughter is today, where my son was when he was 6, and she's a year younger than him. I'm using the two different points, is night and day difference. And I don't know if it's having an older brother and always being at the soccer field and watching games since she's been pretty much born, or watching, or just actually having coaches that understand how to coach and watching these players, these coaches get, I call it, good coaches get left in the dust, and the coaches that are just cherry picking. I can give prime examples of this. It's these coaches will say, "Well, I'm going to go put you on my B team, but I'm going to go take this player that is doing really well and put him on my A team." Then once that neither one of those kids are doing good anymore, they'll try to get them off the B team even. And it just blows my mind that they're just cherry picking talent at a U13 age group. I mean, my a 2013, sorry, 2013 age group. My son's a 2014, and cherry picking these players, but they want to take them as soon as they see them. My son has tried out for teams like, "Oh, I want them on my roster." I'm like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa! I want to see your side of the equation." I've been on the other side. I was the coach. Like, I always had a philosophy of, I need to see your player 3 times before I even will make a decision, because they first have to lose the jitters of themselves. They first have to learn how to communicate with me as the coach, and thirdly, how to gel with the players. And that's minimum 3 practices, maybe 6. I have a coach that told me, he goes, "I want to see your player for a month before I'll even make a decision. And don't come ask me if they're going to make the team in that month. I'll let you know if they're going to make it and how they're doing, or give feedback on where they might need to be placed if they can't make my team." I'm like, whoa, where's the, like, why are we? Like, what would you tell parents or give advice to parents when they're looking at you guys or another club? Because I feel like at that age, it is a 6 month, and you don't even have to stay the 6 month. You just have to pay whatever dollar amount it is to buy yourself out of those 6 month contracts or agreements. I wouldn't even call them contracts, 6 months of agreements. But at the end of the day, like you said, if they aren't winning, they're bouncing. But how do you know how well they're playing? Because it takes time. I mean, you're practicing 1 or 2 days a week. How will they know if the players are gelling? Like, our philosophy is, you give a team a year, unless there's something on that team that's very drastic, and then you have to leave. It's mostly the coach. It's not the players. Players come and go pretty quickly. But what would you say to parents then? What would you ask? Like, I always ask, creativity is my check, one of my higher questions. What's your philosophy on winning versus putting in a weaker player? Like, I have a player that has sat the bench in a tournament all weekend and not has had any minutes because of whatever the reason may be, especially at 5 and 6 years old. Would he put them in a few minutes in the last game just so they have playing time? Because without that playing time, they can't develop. Where do you stand on that? And what advice would you give parents then?
When I went back to, it's much easier to build a house than remodel a house. When I coached from starting out, is I anybody that came in to join the club, anybody, you have to start on my second team. You know, I don't care how good you are. Learning the style of play is going to take you 3 months, 6 months. So you have to start out with second team. And so players will come out, and because their technical ability was behind, they were fine with second team. But the players that then started coming out at U11, because it was select, what do you mean? I'm not going to join your D2. I'm a D1 player. I was like, yeah, you're a D1 player, but my D1 team is a top three team. He goes, then you'll be riding the bench on that team until you learn and work for it, because I teach my kids everything earned, nothing given. So now coming into it, there's so many players that I didn't offer because I felt I'm just setting them up to fail. You know, I'm going to take their money and I'm going to sit them on the bench. So I'm not going to do that. So I feel that from my philosophy when they join is, if I offer you a spot, it's with playing time's not guaranteed. But I'm offering you a spot because I feel that you have the potential to earn the playing time. But there's your part. Your part is, every practice, are you putting maximum effort? Okay. If you're not, playing time is not guaranteed. So I've seen where coaches sign a roster of 20, 22, 24, and they're not telling these parents. And then it becomes, hey, we can move you. The parents are thinking, okay, you signed me on a nail, but now I'm playing on RL North Texas, and they're just bouncing around, and the club's not giving them a refund. For me, I look at it as like, that's a customer that I want to retain. I don't want to every year lose half the team and get another team just because of the platform. So for me, I always look at it as like, if a coach is constantly cherry picking, and in North Texas, I don't understand how big our clubs are. You know, for us, DKSC, we have a big club. But every year, every club looks to replace their bottom 4, 5, 6 players every year. So what does that tell you about their development? They haven't developed. They're not interested in develop. I've heard from coaches at other clubs where their staff meetings is, here's a list of players we got to go get them. That's their staff meeting. And it's become where at our games, you have every director of coaching on the sideline talking to parents, talking to players. It's just a recruiting war. So the players, the parents that are there, what does that tell you? Okay, you're about to get replaced. If you're not in the top 5, 6, whether it's replaced with starting to not coming off the bench or having a roster spot, but parents don't care. All they care about is, I'm on this team. I don't care if I'm number 21 and don't play any minutes. I get to say, we won XYZ. And so for me, the way we handle it is in my opinion, I look at it as like, here's a roster of 18. Here's a roster of 16. We have players that we need to be identifying. So telling a parent what things they should be looking at, like you say, it takes 6 months, or it takes a month, or it takes 3 sessions. For me, I always look at it as like, why are you looking to switch teams? I always try to find that. It's like, okay, you played this position. Why? I wasn't getting the playing time. Okay. Here's your level that I see. I have this player for a year, 2 years, 3 years. You're going to compete against you for minutes against her. It's you versus you. I always paint the picture of, I'm going to play the ones that want the ball, the ones that are fast learners, understanding the game, that play for each other, that have a good work rate, work ethic. Most of the time they'll come back and they'll come back and they'll come back. I look at it as, okay, this kid, these parents are the type of parent I want to develop. The one that wants the promises and you don't give them, because at other clubs, they're signing contracts the day they show up to tryouts. Yes. Here it is. And I just don't get it. I don't get that parents aren't doing their due diligence. That's why this is the first time I met you. So when you started talking about the club and the research, I'm like, here's somebody that actually has taken the time to do the research with the price possession of their child, their environment, their culture. And there's so many parents that they let other parents, oh, this is where you should be. And I've heard it from parents that throughout the years as I was coaching, parents will say they'll come out to a tryout at U15. And they're like, I never came out to your tryout because everybody always told me, don't ruin your kid. Don't ruin the kid. Don't take them. Don't do this. And it was just fear tactics. He goes, now that I've done my research, I realize I missed out and my kid's not at that level, but can she start out on the second team? And I'm like, yes, but you know, the second team's so much better now because you didn't develop.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like that's the way we look at it within our house. And I can only give it from my example. So our philosophy with our kids is that we are the gateway to their dreams. So we have to provide the bridge so they can get there. And that means if it means private lessons, when my son started to play club soccer at 6 years old, he got shoved and he started to cry because they were cheating. We're like, no, bud, soccer is a physical game. And so we hired a private coach to teach him how to push him around really and teach him how to be physical within the rules of the game at 6 years old. And he's had a private coach pretty much ever since then. But the way we look at it as is it something that he wants? It's I scheduled his private lesson the other day for him and I turned to him, I go, okay, your session's on Sunday if you want it. I haven't scheduled it yet, but do you want to do this? You might be giving up this activity. And it's your choice. And he goes, no, I want to go to play soccer. And I'm like, okay, we'll schedule it for you. And our fear is burnout at a young age. And but at the same time, like I said, we're his pathway. We have some means to pay for the extra stuff for him to go into things. But it's like listening to the private lessons. Eventually you either outgrow, I always say, even with any coach, it's either you outgrow the coach or the coach outgrows you. And it's finding, unfortunately, when it hit that U15 age group, that's a great age to talk about, is that sometimes the player does not develop anymore and they need to go find a place where they can develop. And because the team has outgrown and you can't, as a team focus so much on that individual anymore. You can go seek advice on how to promote your player and push them up, but how do you grow that player that is falling behind or the coach? And that's where we've learned it's either our child has outgrown the team. It's just nothing, there's nothing against that team. It's just where he's at this moment, or the coach has outgrown him. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that's goes back to the whole development mentality. If you aren't willing to let them develop, we can't grow. And with that being said, like how do you guys handle coaches, do they same coach has the same player for all of academy and they hand it off in the select world, or do they come back or do they follow them all the way until like you did? You went from 5 until 18, or do you have a process? I know like FC Dallas, every 2 year intervals, you change coaches almost, and it's just different voices. You might get that coach back in 4 years, but right now you're going to be handed off to another coach to develop at a certain group.
Yeah, no, that's definitely there's pros and cons to either way. You know, I coached the old ones from 5 years old to 18, 19, and I remember I had to reinvent myself three times. You know, from U4 to U10, I was more of their father figure than actually their coach. Because I always say it's like, you know, at those years, you know, parents are really their first coach. You know what you're telling them because you only have them an hour and a half. So I remember reinventing myself from the academy to the younger, and then in the older age groups. I gave the team up for 1 year at the junior year. We merged with the feeders. And the director of coaching, Hugh Bradford, I gave him my teams. I was like, and I told the parents, y'all need another voice. Y'all need to learn something that, you know, I basically need to focus on the younger ones. It's their time. And, you know, it was a bumpy road. And so, but I'm glad I did that. Now I don't think it's kind of like, okay, we have to do it a certain way, like 2 years. I feel that if you have the methodology and it's the same terminology and system of play, then move them up, you know, move them up to the next coach that that coach has strengths in certain age groups. For our academy, we have two coaches that are like the face of on the girls' side. Right? I'm not speaking on the boys' side, but on the girls' side, they've had good success of developing academy players. Those coaches have passed on teams. They're fine with staying in the academy because I've told them, if you have a gift, and you're doing it, you know, stick to it. And then whenever you decide, hey, it's time for me to maybe do something different, I'm here to help you. So we're trying to implement that where with me, I may be tied to the U10s, the U11s, the U12s, U13s at some point. You know, I might be U13, U14. We have some new coaches in our staff that we're having those conversations. I see you more as 18, 17 at the older age groups. But I think that there's no like, because I feel that when you move them to another coach, I'll give you an example. Our success we've had is that coaches stayed with their team. They had retention. They had a style of play. I know for my own daughter, I gave my team up to a coach. I couldn't give them to another coach because I knew his style of play had nothing. It was night and day, you know. So me giving them a team of technical players weren't going to, and I told them that. I said, these aren't your type of players. So just moving it, you have to really, really be focused on the style of play. And I think for clubs that do it here in North Texas, every 2 years we move them to another. Look at their style of playing. It's direct. So it doesn't change. So if one coach is coaching possession, build out the back, you know, slowing the game down, speeding it up, and then the other coach, and then you're moving, it's a disaster. It's a disaster. And I remember the example I made with you as far as clubs telling the team that I wouldn't give them the exposure. Parents would say, don't you think you need another voice? You know, how do you know it's not better? And I would tell the parents, you know what? It's a fair point, but how do you know it's not 10 times worse? You know, it's kind of like, do you just change another voice for the sake of changing a voice? That other voice could be very detrimental because what they're teaching is night and day wrong or different. So that's where I think it needs to be. What are the pros? What are the cons and the responsibilities of each age group, what you're trying to teach, like what you're trying to prepare. But just for changing, I wouldn't. I'd rather just leave it. If it's not broken, don't change it. But if the other coach is like, for example, Hugh Bradford is our director of coaching, I will be very confident in giving a team to him because he's been coaching 30 years and he understands, okay, this coach, this team plays this style. This team plays this style. I can't do this with this team because they're going to go five steps back.
Right.
And that's why I feel it's like building a house. Let's get the academy right. So when those teams come and they're their technical, tactical, high soccer IQ players, the coach knows that's their identity. That's their style. That's, we have a methodology. Then it's an easy transition.
Now, that being said, that goes back to your philosophy. Is the philosophy is the same throughout the club as they progress from the academy to the select side of the world? It's much easier for the players and the parents to understand what's expected.
Correct.
So I'm going to wrap this up. I'm going to ask my favorite question. Okay. And it's more because I feel it explains who you are. So this question is, who has been the greatest influence as you as a player, because you did play in your younger years, and now as a coach, who's your greatest influence as a coach?
As a player, it was Pelé. As a kid, I was one of those kids that knew I wanted to be a professional soccer player as soon as I started playing, and I obsessed with it. So looking at VHS videos, I used to tell cousins all the time, I want to be Pelé. I want to be Pelé. Reading his biographies and autobiographies, and I knew everything about him. So he was the style of play, the uniforms that I wore. I would say Pelé as a player, bicycle kicks or being different. That was me always trying to do different things. So that as a player, Pelé was the player that influenced me as a player the most. As a coach, I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't think I have a coach that I would say, and this coach influenced me or this. I honestly feel it's like when I first started coaching and it became my ministry, some of the things that I was talking to parents, and I tell people all the time, it was God's plan, God's purpose for me. Because I used to tell my mom, if I can't be a professional soccer player, if I was in an accident and I couldn't play, I'll commit suicide. And my mom would get mad. She's like, stop talking. I was like, this is the air I breathe. This is, and my friends used to always kid around and say, that soccer ball is Juan's girlfriend. I was like, yeah, this is my soccer ball. I sleep with this soccer ball from night to day. So then coaching was something I never wanted to do. But when it became my ministry, I realized the Lord had a plan for me to be a soccer coach. Even though I said a million times, I'm not going to coach. There's no way I'm a coach. My wife was the coach of the family. That my daughter changed that. So then things that, okay, I can't put my eggs in this one basket. So how do I not burn the fun? I got to make it fun. The style of play, it was more through experience. And I still remember coaches that coach, they would see my team play and they're like, darn it, exactly how he used to play, he's teaching his kids, because they have that flair. We used to always do pickup games, and I would say, try this, do this deception, control them with your upper body. It's a simple sport. Put deception, no look passes, because you're looking at vision. And they were like, man, these little kids. And I didn't realize like I was doing that. I just kind of look at it and say, how I wanted the kids to play was the Brazilian style play. And then going through there, I started meeting coaches like Anson, like Becky, and I started picking their brains. And I look at it as like, okay, this coach is more defensive minded. So this coach is more tactical, this is more technical, and then just asking questions and reading, seeing sessions like by the pros, by Pep and Barcelona, my favorite all-time team when Pep was there and Messi and Xavi and just the tiki-taka and just moving, letting the ball do the work. But I really will look at it as like, as a coach, I never had a coach that I looked and said, man, can you mentor me? I feel like I almost feel that movie, Good Will Hunting, where he went to get that education at the library. He wasn't even a student there. And I felt like every coach, even coaches that were new, I was always kind of like, what's he doing? What's he doing? And I would tell these coaches, I was like, you come to your session. And I like your session because you kind of talk to your players, then you want to sit down and have like appetizer or hors d'oeuvres, and then you get to your main meal, and then you get to your dessert. It's very like this. I used to see myself as man going in straight into the dinner. I said, so talking to him, I would tell a coach, I was like, I just think you talk too much. I think you talk 20 minutes. I think 5 minutes for me works, maybe 15. But I realized, hey, you have to talk to them, not just go into the session. So I feel like I don't have one coach. I learn from every coach. And I always tell coaches, we all have strengths and weaknesses. I'm very in possession type coach, you know, because I always say good defense is a great offense. They don't touch the ball. But out of possession is so important. So I pick coaches like Hugh Bradford and other coaches like, you know, and set pieces. It's constantly, you got to learn from everybody because everybody, even the newest coaches. And now that I'm getting back into it, I've realized how much I learned, but how much more I need to learn. And so having that 3-year break really helped me find a lot of coaches to see what they're doing and pick what worked for them, what didn't work. And now I'm kind of even creating my own style on top of what I had already learned doing it for 15 years.
Hello, guys. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. With Juan this week, I really enjoyed our conversation. I enjoyed how much he was willing to dive into conversation and dig into what we wanted to talk about and share his insight into North Texas soccer and share a lot about DKSC and their philosophy and how they do things. So if you're looking for them, you can find them online. I'll post a link to their website and their Facebook page in the comments of this episode. And I hope you guys are, if you're looking for a club, please check them out. So until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.